Off. All right, then, since you force me. He waved his hands. He snapped his fingers a few times. The guards, after checking that they were still the same shape, each grabbed an arm. It may be delayed action, he ventured as they gripped harder. Alternatively, would you be interested in hearing a famous quotation, he said. His feet were lifted off the ground. Or perhaps not. Rincewind, running absent-mindedly in mid-air, was brought in front of the officer.
On your knees, rebel, said the officer.
I'd like to, but
I saw what you did to Captain Four White Fox.
What? Who's he?
Take him to the Emperor.
As he was dragged off, Rincewind saw for one brief moment the guards closing on the Red Army, swords flashing. A metal plate shuddered for a moment and then dropped on the floor.
Careful.
I ain't used to being careful. Bruce the Hoon wasn't ca-
Shut up about Bruce the Hoon.
Well, dang you too.
What? Anyone out there?
Cohen stuck his head out of the pipe. The room was dark, damp and full of pipes and runnels. Water went off in every direction to feed fountains and cisterns.
No, he said in a disappointed voice. Very well. Everyone out of the pipe.
There was some echoey swearing and the scrape of metal as Hamish's wheelchair was manoeuvred into the long, low cellar. Mr. Savaloy lit a match as the horde spread out and examined their surroundings.
Congratulations, gentlemen, he said. I believe we are in the palace.
Yeah, said Truckle. We've conquered a love-making pipe. What good is that?
We could rape it, said Caleb hopefully.
Hey, this wheel thing turns.
What's a love-making pipe?
What does this lever do?
What? Said Mad Hamish.
How about we find a door, rush out, and kill everyone?
Mr. Savaloy closed his eyes. There was something familiar about this situation, and now he realised what it was. He'd once taken an entire class on a school trip to the city armoury. His right leg still hurt him on wet days.
No, 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 he said. What good would that do? Boy Willie, please don't pull that lever.
Well, I'd feel better for one, said Cohen. Ain't killed anyone all day except a guard, and they hardly count.
Remember that we're here for theft, not murder, said Mr. Savaloy. Now, please, out of all that wet leather and into your nice new clothes.
I don't like this part, said Cohen, pulling on a shirt. I like people to know who I was.
Yeah, said Boy Willie. Without our leather and mail, people will just think we're a load of old men.
Exactly, said Mr. Savaloy. That is part of the subterfuge.
Is that like tactics? Said Cohen.
Yes. All right, but I don't like it, said old Vincent. Supposing we win, what kind of song will the minstrels sing about people who invaded through a pipe?
An echoey one, said Boy Willie.
They won't sing anything like that, said Cohen firmly. You pay a minstrel enough, he'll sing whatever you want.
A flight of damp steps led to a door. Mr. Savaloy was already at the top, listening.
That's right, said Caleb. They say that whoever pays the piper calls the tune.
But, gentlemen, said Mr. Savaloy, his eyes bright, whoever holds a knife to the piper's throat writes the symphony.
The assassin moved slowly through Lord Hong's chambers. He was one of the best in Hung Hung's small but very select guild, and he certainly was not a rebel. He disliked rebels. They were invariably poor people, and therefore unlikely to be customers. His mode of movement was unusual and cautious. It avoided the floor. Lord Hong was known to tune his floorboards. It made considerable use of furniture and decorative screens, and occasionally of the ceiling as well. And the assassin was very good at it. When a messenger entered the room through a distant door, he froze for an instant, and then moved in perfect rhythm towards his quarry, letting the newcomer's clumsy footsteps mask his own. Lord Hong was making another sword. The folding of the metal and all the tedious yet essential bouts of heating and hammering were, he found, conducive to clear thinking.